And we're off another episode of the Breckening Podcast. I am here with Jacob Lindsay of Childerberg.
That's right.
You the main guy that puts it together?
Yeah, I'm the only guy who puts it together.
Only guy. Okay, sweet. All right. I would have felt bad if we're missing
I didn't invent the name.
You didn't?
Car Campit invented the name. So,
okay.
At Car Campit on Twitter. Or actually, I think he's at TLE Car Campit now, but he does a... Formerly, it was called the Fagcast. So he did a podcast called the Fagcast for a while, and now it's called Timeline Earth.
Okay.
But he, when we lived in Virginia, I was getting online trying to find people in Texas to be friends with.
Okay.
And, you know, we had common interests, Carr and I, and he one night texted or tweeted out that he's like, this year, in order to protest the Bilderbergs, I'm going to hold my own event called Childerberg, but it's just going to be me drinking alone in my apartment. And I read that, and I was like, Childerberg's a cool name. Drinking alone in your apartment is lame. Let's drink together at the lake.
Okay.
So
that's
how
humble
that's kinda how it started.
It's been a hard... Okay, so I met you and your better half and Will and his wife when I opened up for Shane Gillis at Fort Worth. September or October 2020, fall 2020. And I've told people like, y'all just like the cut of my jib, and we talked for like a half hour.
Well, I could tell based on your set that you were like a no agenda, like conspiracy kind of guy.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, oh, this guy's perfect. This he'll fit.
Which
right
I had just I heard them. It was March of 2020 when Adam was on JRE, and I was just like, who is this dude? Because I just never I just never came across that podcast.
Sure,
maybe I wasn't looking hard enough, or I didn't know. Turns out, my buddy Dustin and Matt, they're well aware. The guys that do. Shout out Jerry Jonestown Massacre podcast, which I'll be on tomorrow. It doesn't matter because this will upload past then. Anyways, so we were talking after that, and then we all hit on the, like, from what y'all saw on my set and through talking to y'all, it really brought out the Ron Paul 08 vibes that I really latched onto. I was, you know, high school, I was like your John Stewart liberal. Anyway, growing up here, I was like, you know, actively against the second Iraq war.
Sure.
Debating with fellow senior high schoolers. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's an intellectual, not minefield, because that implies some kind of intelligence of designing a mine.
Right.
Just a bunch of idiots who didn't know what they're talking about. And my talking points are coming from John Stewart. And again, against the Iraq war, that's, you know, where I started. And then after high school, started getting into punk rock. And then I guess thanks to the internet, the Wild West internet back then.
Oh, yeah. It was a different place.
And I saw this Ron Paul guy talking. And I've always been like, you know, pro, like, you know, it's like legalized drugs.
Yeah.
Not really the easy parts of understanding freedom.
Right. Yeah.
The easy ones without having to read, you know, a Murray Rothbard tome.
Right. Yeah. Which I probably got all of them right there.
Oh,
somewhere.
Yeah. Without reading any of these books. Yeah. About the, you know, just the, you know, why, you know, garbage collection should be privatized. The boring shit. Maybe it was a clip or something of like just this Ron Paul guy. And of course, I'm like, oh, who's this old white politician?
Right. Yeah.
This guy telling me. He looks like all the rest.
Yeah.
But then I heard what he was saying, and you're just kind of like, what?
Yeah.
No, he should be for this war. He should be for locking people up. What? And it all resonated with me and my friends at the time.
Yeah.
And he was just
so different. And I got into that movement as well. I was a little bit earlier coming into libertarianism than that, but I ran the Young Libertarians of Virginia Beach and was I kind of had the same reaction, like, oh, I should dislike this guy, but it was because I was like, oh, he's a Republican.
Yeah.
So he's not a libertarian. He's a Republican. Yeah. But then it turned out, okay, he was actually the nominee for the Libertarian Party in 1988.
He's the Republican. Oh, he's the Republican. Most of the Republicans don't like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
they're
he
just
was,
like,
and,
ah,
but
shit,
all that same stuff, like
them.
When,
yeah.
like the, like one of the best moments I showed to my wife before we got married, and she was like, "Oh, I love this guy," was when they asked him, they were like, "You would be in favor of legalizing heroin, but like, aren't you worried that people would use it?" And he goes, "Raise your hand in here if heroin was legal, if you would start shooting up." Oh, I need the government to tell me to not use heroin. He's like, no, everybody knows it's bad for you. Some people are going to use it. And we spend billions of dollars trying to stop people from using it. It doesn't make sense.
And like, it's either him or probably someone else. It's like, they can get it in jail.
Yeah.
So what are we doing making it illegal now? Not really.
It doesn't make sense, yeah.
Not really hurting the market.
Yeah, and I mean, he always, and my dad actually retired in November, but he was active duty military. That's why we were out in Virginia Beach. And when I first started getting into Ron Paul, he was also kind of like, I don't know, because, you know, very gung-ho, Ted Cruz type Republican, that sort of stuff. And over the last couple of years, he's kind of been like, yeah, you know what? I think maybe you and the Ron Paul people were right. Because, I mean, because 2008 was, I guess, 6 years into the Iraq War. And he did multiple deployments in Iraq, multiple deployments in Afghanistan. And I think in his mind, after 9/11, we're going to go in, we're going to kick butt, and then there'll be a little bit of peacekeeping thing there. But then, like, he's now he just retired. And it's like 20-something years in Afghanistan, and there's still troops in Iraq. And,
yeah.
And it's like...
Oh, it turns out it's more complicated.
That's
the reason I don't get into too many, like, even discussions these days, because it's like, oh, it's just, we'll go in there, kick Saddam's ass, do a little peacekeeping.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, it turns out it's more complicated than that?
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow, who knew?
Yeah.
If anyone could have seen the foresight of that happening anywhere else in time, Vietnam, Afghanistan, 80s. Who knew?
Well, and that's exactly what Ron Paul was saying, even at the start.
He's like, I'm old, bitch. I've seen this before. Yeah. I've seen this formula. It doesn't end well.
Yeah, right. Well, and a lot of it, too, was like, when the whole Freedom Fries was going on and like they hate us because of our freedom and all that sort of stuff, is he was going, have you listened at all to any of what they said is their problem? And whether it's true or not is irrelevant, but it's you have
if someone
to
hates
you,
they're gonna tell you why.
Yeah.
Like if they're good at hating, you know, and actually back up what they're saying, and they're not just like creating lines like, you know, like back like high school bullshit.
Yeah.
No, if they really fucking hate you and are going to use violence, they'll probably tell the world why they're doing it.
Yeah, and that was kind of what Ron Paul was always pointing out in, I mean, even before he was running for president in 08, was just that they've told us their problem, and their problem is that whether you know it or not, your government has been bombing them for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And this is actually very similar to, so I've got Ukrainians living with me, only one that is not my wife, but I had four. So, cause my wife is Ukrainian, but it's actually a very similar, I recognize the same thing as when her mom came and like, you know, that meme, the like, everybody I don't like is Hitler meme.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that, but with Putin. So it's like, it's everything I don't like is Putin. So like, no matter what you say, it's always, it's Putin. And, but when she first moved in, I was like, I mean, you realize that your government has been bombing Donetsk and Luhansk for 8 years. She's like, no, we would never do that. And I'm like, article after article after article after article. I mean, like, how is it that you lived in Kiev and didn't know that this was going on? But also, but I empathize with it because I live in America and I had no idea in, you know, 2002, 2003 that we'd been bombing half of the Middle East for the last 10 years.
So, yeah, and you're also distracted with your own life.
Yeah, exactly.
And even the people whose entire lives and livelihoods are devoted to that,
right?
Chances are it's in their best interest and their paychecks to not say certain things.
That's right. Yeah.
And to only say certain things and push a narrative.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, well, all right, I got to find out the people that are going to tell me, you know, actually what's going on and who may not even have sponsors and have to really keep their livelihood going. And their career's going based off their, integrity, you know, shit like that. And they're like, all right, you know, maybe this small independent place will, you know, give me a paycheck or something like that.
Right.
But, it's because at first you're just like, again, like going back like the Jon Stewart Daily Show times, you're just like, okay, I can trust Jon Stewart. Yeah, CNN, NBC, they're kind of shitty, but I'll tune into them. Oh, Fox is the real enemy.
Right, yeah.
And you're just... And again, like they're all the enemy. It's just if you're like someone like Jon Stewart or any kind of talking head now, you can just shine a spotlight on like they're the enemy. It's just like you need more spotlights.
Yeah,
and don't just by de facto who I'm not shining a spotlight on.
Like even Jon Stewart, even now, like he does the whole spotlight thing. He's very good at. It's the follow through that sometimes, like, he just had actually recently had an interview that was great, actually, with like the deputy secretary of the Pentagon or something.
It was about like how they, you know, can't keep track of what they're spending.
Yeah, they can't pass an audit, and like he did a great job in that, but then it just sort of ended with. Like she and obviously
it ended with, so what's your book about?
it was kind of that, but it was sort of, politicians are really good at this, is they can deflect really easily. So like what John Stewart cares about is veterans getting taken care of, people getting help and all that sort of stuff. So when they basically, let's not talk about failing the audit over and over again. Let's talk about how much more money now we're going to be giving to veterans. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay. And then and that kind of derails that conversation. But like the real question is,
if they weren't being filmed, he would have been like, good one. That was a good one.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah. But and she's kind of laughing about it. She's like, well, just because we failed an audit doesn't mean it's corrupt. And like, and he had the good follow-up on that where he's like, if you can't tell me where the money goes, it doesn't mean you're not corrupt.
Yeah.
So like you can't prove that you're not corrupt. It could be going into your pocket.
Sure, you're not corrupt, but it also instead it means you're massively incompetent.
Yeah.
So which one do you want to be? Corrupt implies some level of intelligence.
Right.
Incompetence implies laziness and being a dipshit.
I mean, it's nuts. I mean, to go back way far for conspiracy stuff is that the first failure of an audit that I recall was like
Rumsfeld.
It was like a week before 9/11.
Yeah, and we didn't know. And what sucks is I wonder about the people that saw that.
Yeah.
Because they followed nerd shit like that. Yeah. Or just like, oh man, this. And he's like on some primordial message board 2001, just like, oh man, you fucking see. And then a week later, no one's gonna care about what you just said.
Yeah.
Until a few years later. Where they could really
wait a second.
They could really tie a nice bow on 9/11 conspiracies and just be like, a week before, here's this clip.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Well, that was, definitely the Wild West of the internet, because we got internet. My dad was always kind of like a tech junkie, and we got internet in 92 and no restrictions from my parents. Like I don't think they realized what it was at the time. So I was on talking to people on message boards and on all these types of things. And I think this is actually kind of how I got. IIRC
or something like that.
What
was it called? IIRC?
IIRC was one. Then there was...
I never used it, but I saw people use it.
There was a bunch of them. It was... we were actually... Our first computer that was hooked up to the internet was a Commodore 64.
Wow.
Which also had really great video games. We had it for a long time, so it was just kind of always part of... I guess I've always been like attracted to like ghost stories and conspiracies and cryptids and all that sort of stuff. So like, and when the internet
high, I went through every book possible in my junior high library about aliens, Bigfoot, Loch Ness.
Right.
Wasn't that big of a selection.
Right. But
that's where the X-Files at the time. I was like,
that's where
the seed was planted.
I really think that's what it was X-Files, because I was so into the X-Files and, young. I'm 36 now, so like I was... 7 or 8 or something like that around that time, and wasn't really allowed to watch the X-Files, but I'd come down the stairs.
And your dad's military, so he's like, I don't want him thinking that.
Yeah. I'd come down the stairs and I'd watch it from the balcony while my parents were watching it.
But they were watching it.
Yeah, they would watch it, but we the kids were not allowed to watch it. So.
There was some like scary episodes.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. Is like the scary, like even I think it was like the second or third episode when they had that leech man. That was in the series.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember I had nightmares of that.
Even through a couple of windows.
Yeah, still I could go down, peek, and watch it. But that was kind of what I think kind of opened the door for the whole liberty movement for me, was like getting into all this stuff. And also, this was also very, very heavy on the internet at the time, was all of the Waco conspiracies and all of the Oklahoma City bombing conspiracies. Which a lot of that I think is still accurate as far as, well, the Waco one is a little bit different, but like the Oklahoma City one, I'm pretty sure that was either an FBI sting gone really right or an FBI sting gone wrong that then they covered up. I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff about that one, but that was all stuff that kind of funneled me into like the Liberty Movement in the late 90s and then into the 2000s.
Yeah, those are better, when you're not paying attention, like those happen. Like, again, I'm 38. And so those things are happening, but Even like my parents weren't the type of people to, you know, they're not political or anything like that. So it's happening. You're like, whoa, okay. And you moved on, but still OKC, Waco, there's a lot to dissect there. But then like 9/11 happened and this is kind of almost like an afterthought, but you know, still if you, you know, want to bring that all in to like a big package, it's an excellent package of like what the government, you know, does, says they're doing, what they're actually doing, what they're lying about and how they can, push think, certain things to
I think when you start kind of accepting that type of stuff, and this is kind of the Childeberg crowd, is once you start kind of accepting that your government is not your friend, then you start kind of questioning everything.
And that's
what kind of leads you into like the libertarian world, is whether or not you agree with, I think it's like the meeting of free market economics and the conspiracy stuff. That's what makes a libertarian. And if you're into conspiracy stuff, but you're a communist, then you end up becoming like an Antifa leftist or something like that. So it just ends up being, it just funnels you into two different areas.
If I ever meet a libertarian that's not like open to any conspiracies, I'm just be like, you're like, a fed.
Yeah, exactly. You're not one of us.
I don't get that.
But I think, and this was pretty much everybody that goes to Childeberg is, except for I guess the guys that are, that's the other thing that's so funny is a lot of the younger guys that go, like, I don't really think of myself as that old. Like 36 is not that old.
No.
But we get people who were like not alive in 9/11.
Yeah.
And like that kind of stuff is like wild.
So my job that I had for 8.5 years was, you know, part of it before I gave people a cigarette coupon was looking at their ID.
Yeah.
Taking a picture of it.
Right.
And we're always, you know, we always had to be 21 and up. Mm-hmm. So that was always what we were looking for. So, and it got to a point, you know, back in, you know, 2021, where people, what their IDs would say, they're born in the year 2000, and that whole like 19 to 20 thing. Because at first somebody, you know, they didn't know, they come up to you, be like, oh, my friend got a coupon. You're just like, I gotta be over 21. And you could easily see that, born in the year 2000, 2000, whatever. But then they were, and then they're actually over 21. You're just like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you bring in the, you know, the 9/11 thing, you're just like they don't know.
Yeah, they weren't there. And I mean, what's wild about it, so there's a guy, I don't think he was at last Childeberg, I think he was at the first one that you came to, who is, I think he was 22, so I think he was alive at 9/11, but in his...
Not cognizant.
Yeah, in his memory, we've never not been at war.
Oh.
So that, and that kind of thing is, it's sort of a... Like there was a before time when you could go onto the airplane and you didn't have to walk through all the security and all that sort of stuff. But there's a large group of people who are now drinking age that weren't part of that, and it's just kind of weird to think about that. Like when we first moved,
takes off their shoes before they get on the airplane.
Well, and also what's funny about it is that like even my sisters who are younger than me don't know why we take our shoes off or anything. They don't remember the shoe bomber.
Yeah,
and. Which also I think was kind of bullshit, but the idea. So like when we first moved from California to Virginia, this was 2000. So I had like a collection of pocket knives. I brought those on the carry-on with me on the plane.
Oh wow!
And nobody cared. there was no security or anything like that. We walked in, went through the metal detector, it went off. Then my dad was military, so he's like, oh, I'm military, so I've got these things. And they're like, okay. And I had like a bag full of knives. Not huge knives. They were just like, it was a pocket knife collection. And it was just, it's just
a bag full of multiple 9/11s in there.
Right. Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, it's really kind of wild because just to think about how unconcerned they were with this sort of stuff. And then now they are extremely concerned about it. But anytime they test the TSA, they failed to get 90% of the contraband. They're going to get your tube of toothpaste.
They just need more funding.
Yeah, exactly.
They just need more funding. That'll fix it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
if we pass, then everything would be good, and we could just
I
nothing says to get rid of this.
But it's kind of one of those. This is what I was super concerned about with COVID. Is there's nothing. I think it's a Ron Paul quote. Is there's nothing more permanent than temporary government program.
Oh,
and
probably.
And that's sort of like 9/11. Is we're still living with all this security state stuff from that. And this is what I was super concerned about when COVID started, because I was not a believer at all. I was still going to the office until they forced us to leave. And now I work from home and I love it. But so I guess that's the silver lining. But early on, like, I think there was like one day I asked my wife, I was like, this is bullshit, right? Like, and because you remember H1N1 and swine flu all those types of things. And she's going, well, I don't know. And I was kind of going like, am I wrong about this? And then like a week later, I was like, no, I'm not wrong about this. Like, like this is it's probably going to make people sick. Although we still haven't gotten it, my wife and I. So.
Oh, yeah. Out of all the tests I've taken, I've never tested positive. And yep. I've had like twice a year, I'll have like a really stuffy allergy thing. But that's just like, you know.
Yeah,
being stuffed up, you know, and pop some decongestants and
Well, I mean, I believe it exists, but it's just when you kind of follow the money on it, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, this is bullshit.
Oh, it's funny. Like you talk. I remember you talk about like the like Ebola H1N1. I remember, and I did that. I didn't really do this anymore. I think a lot of comics have probably moved on from like, unless it's something very specific and you just need to mention COVID to get you into that place.
Yeah.
But jokes like about COVID, I did a joke. I loved it about you never needed to buy a second mask because there's always just one on the ground. Yeah. So I like pointing out the things that maybe people aren't thinking about.
Right.
I'm just like, yeah, I want people to think about all the masks on the ground.
Yeah.
And just how I'm like, hey, remember how you guys are all about like, you know, not littering and pollution?
Right.
Well, here's the mask. You know, just talk about like, you know, just like a turtle with like a mask around its neck, right, or something like that. And I that, you know, that's when, you know, we're, you know, getting back to comedy shows in like 2021, all that. There's some life on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like doing that now. If I got lazy, maybe. But so I mentioned like the buying, you know, the picking up a mask on the ground, be like, oh, we can go into this restaurant again. You just pick up one, you know, just to you know, get people to think about that. So in that joke, I talked about so it was like, what, year 2000? It was sophomore year, world geography. And we're just in class writing something down. A kid just had like a big old cough, you know, a few coughs in the back of the crowd, in the back of the class. And then another kid just goes, SARS. And we all, we all just died laughing. It was great. I think the teacher was like, in the joke, he's just like, that's a good one. All right, back to what we're talking about, Mesopotamia. And then, but I heard that it was just a joke.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
But and that's as far as that it got, was just in a news cycle for, I don't know, a week.
Yeah, and I still don't know what, I don't know what the difference was. I think the difference was just the heightened amount of polarization due to Trump. I think that was kind of, because like they kept trying this type of thing. Like, oh, this is the next big one or whatever.
But we weren't divided enough.
Yeah.
Or polarized enough, divided enough.
Yeah, well, I think, because, like, and you could see this all through COVID, was like, early on, the conservatives were the ones that were in favor of masks because Trump was.
Oh.
And then like about 6 months in, it switched.
Mm.
And because initially they were telling us, no, you don't need masks. You don't need it. And then like, then it turns out Fauci was like, well, I was telling you not to wear masks. We were trying to save it for the hospitals. And it's like, okay, so you're lying to us. How do we know you're not lying now?
But
early on, all the Republicans were just like, he's lying, wear the masks. And then it switched, and the Republicans were like, no, we're not going to wear the masks. Whereas, like, my wife and I never wore the masks, and if they told us to leave, we'd just leave.
Yeah.
But all of the things that kind of went through for that, all of the stuff that kind of came out of COVID was, it's all team stuff. It's none of it's based in reality. It's all, I don't do this because it's not part of my team. And I don't think there was that for SARS or for swine flu or any of those types of things.
No, they weren't coordinated enough.
Yeah, there wasn't.
Or they did.
It wasn't like split off into factions.
There wasn't enough inertia or motivation or money behind it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the money. I also think
whip together a testing company, giant, you know, blank checks for marketing.
Yeah.
This, you know, things like, you know, mass vaccines and whatnot.
Well, and I think also now, like, it's. There's a large percentage of people who can work from home. Like none of my, I have two jobs, but neither one of them requires me to be in an office, but I always was. Mm. And I am actually more productive at home.
The opposite. I got to go somewhere to get something.
At first, that's how I felt about it. Like when we first started working.
But also I have minimal computer skills. So it's, I'm not, my productivity requires me to like do something.
Yeah.
and like at home, that's the last place I want to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank God. Like a week ago, we got like our, my girlfriend had a friend come over and she's going to help her on her taxes. So we're just like, we got to clean up. Cause yeah. like we're not against people coming over. People rarely come over. And so it was like, all right, well, might as well get some spring cleaning done. Yeah. So we devoted like a day and a half.
Like you can tell I never cleaned. Like,
oh, that's fine. Is this?
I'm the most
dude. It's your office, person. Man. You gotta. Yeah. If you can't, you got your own personal feng shui.
Yeah, yeah.
That you just gotta do shit.
And just if, stacking up bills and things.
If
like
the household
that.
Wants the lights to stay right. on and those that stack of bills to go down. Yeah. You know, they can't touch your shit in here.
that's how I feel about it. Like, so my wife will walk in here sometimes and like you can sense it and you probably sense this with your girlfriend, like that, oh, there's going to be some sort of change coming. And so like she'll come in, look around and be like, what's all this crap on these bunk beds? So my office has bunk beds for everybody who's listening. This house used to be an Airbnb.
Oh, okay.
So my office has bunk beds in it that are built into the wall. So, but you can like she'll come in and like I'm facing the other way, but I'll sense it. I'm like, oh, it's about to come. That like, what's all this crap? I'm like, well, those are my rubber bands, and that thing goes to the pool, and I might use that one later, but I know where it all is, so just leave it. So, that's kind of how all of this.
It's organized up here.
Yeah, like
all right?
I know where everything is. I know, like don't mess with it. So when she cleans up, like one of the things that. It cracks me up now. It used to really frustrate me is that I would be looking for like a light bulb, for example. I'd be like, where is the light bulb that goes to this? And she's like, oh, it's in that box. But when you go look in the box, it's not in the box. It's in a bag in the box, in another box that's in another box with other boxes. But she knows exactly where it is.
A Ukrainian nesting doll organization.
It is. It's like you're opening up all these things and going like, where is this light bulb? I just want one light bulb. But you know, she wants everything compact and put into a smaller space. And she knows where it all is.
But yeah.
I had this too, where I was getting really frustrated in the garage looking for, I had this like rubber piping for a thing on the pool and I'd saved it. So I didn't need it at the time, but I knew it existed. and I was like, ah, perfect opportunity. I'm going to use this rubber piping. Yeah. And I knew it was in the garage somewhere, but she had organized the garage.
Oh.
And so I'm going, where is this thing? And it turned out that it was in a bag, in a bag, in a bag kind of thing. And then finally she came out. But like I was looking for like an hour. And she goes, oh, no, it's right here. And like zip, zip, zip. Here's your rubber hose. So, yeah, it's
I
lost my train of thought.
I organized our Tupperware. So we had like this unused stuff. We got rid of some things, but the system that I thought made sense in my head, my girlfriend fucking absolutely hates. Just like this Tupperware. She's like, I don't like this. I was just like, all right, well, you do it. And I'll just adapt to your system.
Right.
Yeah. And that still has it. Because
that's heterosexual relationships. It's whatever your wife wants.
Yeah, like, just do it. I will adapt. You hate my system. That's fine. I know there's only certain amounts of like we use these like 10 things of Tupperware, high rotation.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's only two of us living in this house. So we're not going through much Tupperware. There's all this plenty of other Tupperware that I think is just overflow. We probably just need to move that somewhere else.
Yeah.
That way we have the space of just, cause like, I think I'm like, all right, well I'm stacking all these things together and they sit on top of the lids. And so the bowl on top is joined up with the lid on top.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think the system, I'm like, all right, I think it's a good system. I'm not married to it. That's fine.
Right. Yeah.
She can totally go in there and do it her way. There's a part of me is just like, I think it's just to get rid of the things we don't use until we have to.
Right.
Then we have that, you know, sitting in the overflow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how I am. I don't ever want to get rid of anything, but I don't really want it in my space. I want it like in the garage. So, but I don't want, like I have pieces of hose or pieces of like little pieces of things. Like I got a gigantic jar of just like random screws and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
But they're useful.
A drawer of cords, old phone cords, and I'm like, you know what? I don't need that drawer. Yeah, that can.
Yeah.
that can stay there for as long as it needs to.
Leave it in there.
That plastic will survive for a long time.
But it's filed away in my mind. It's like, I know where these things are. I know they exist.
Oh, I still get yelled at to this day for not knowing where certain things are in the house. She's like, how long have you lived here? I'm just like, yeah, a long time, but I don't know. And sometimes she's like, why did it take you so long to find that? And I'm just like, I was looking at these other things too. When I'm like, oh no, it totally wasn't. It just clicked.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, not this filing drawer, the other one.
Right. Yeah. But you know, it's kind of like doubled up. So my wife, I accept it because I'm married to her. My mother-in-law, now that she lives with us, does similar things, but it's annoying because she can't speak English.
Mm.
And so like things will change or happen and I'll be like, I think I was very tired, but I flipped out that we were out of eggs one time. And
eggs are great. They're important.
I just wanted scrambled eggs. Mm. It was a long day. I hadn't eaten. And, I had planned it out. Like I got bacon. I got,
It's worse when you plan it out.
Yeah. I got like the bread that I was going to toast and put butter on it. And in my mind, I was like, I know I have a dozen eggs. We never would go through eggs. We would maybe go through a dozen eggs every 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm.
With my mother-in-law here, we go through eggs like we'll get a dozen eggs and it'll be gone the next day. I don't know I don't know where they go. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what's going on. But I open the fridge to get the eggs and I go, what the fuck? And my wife said, what's wrong? Like, there's no eggs. I've been planning out this eggs and bacon for all day long, and I want eggs. She's like, calm down. I'll go down into the store and get you eggs. And I'm like,
I love your post about your mother-in-law because, well, it's not even like hacky because, you know, there's all these like jokes like my mother-in-law, but it's such a unique present situation of just her just being a very unique individual, but also this language barrier.
Oh yeah, that's tough. So like, actually, I got one. I didn't post it. This happened yesterday. We joined Costco yesterday.
Oh, hey, we just my girlfriend got a free year.
Oh, nice, right on.
So we just
pretty good deal actually. We were looking at actually the reason I did it. I was doing research on auto insurance. Mm. You can save a ton of money by getting your auto insurance through Costco.
Oh wow,
yeah, okay. like $500 a year or something. So I was like, oh, that's worth it. So, but anyways, while we were there, this is why we shouldn't have joined Costco is that I saw things that I kind of want but don't really need, and one of them was a chest freezer. I was like, "Oh, I want a chest freezer because I buy like a whole cow."
Yeah, okay.
And so then we'll freeze it. And I do technically have enough room to store it in the other freezers, but my mother-in-law makes these flavored ice cubes. So it's like an ice cube with like lemon or mint or something in it. But she makes so much of it, like one of the refrigerators is just that. One of the freezers.
Oh,
so we actually have two freezers and then the chest freezer now. but one of the freezers is just a whole bunch of these like flavored ice cubes that, to my knowledge, none of us drink.
Huh.
But she keeps making them and just like adding it, like, and she'll save every single container. So they're all in like Greek yogurt containers. So there's like a whole bunch.
They're like giant cubes. I thought there'd be like a, you know, think of like an ice tray.
No, they're like cubes.
Conveniently,
she makes them like a normal ice tray and then breaks them up and puts them in these containers. To my knowledge, nobody drinks them. My wife says she does, but I've never seen it.
Definitely not enough to make a dent in the
in the
backlog.
Right. So I bought this chest freezer because I was like, all right, I got an order of beef coming at the end of the month from this Texas ranch company, and I need space to store it. So I got this freezer, turned the freezer on. I left the house for like 20 minutes, came back. The freezer is changed to refrigerator mode and full of vegetables. And I was like, why are you guys filling up the thing that I bought for me to put meat in? And my friend Jake made the joke because I was complaining about it to them, and he was like, just tell them that you don't want your freezer full of the food for your food.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of what it was. And like after I got calmed down, I was like, okay, I just want all this stuff moved out. I want this freezer to just be my freezer. I want the only things I want in there are Dr. Pepper while it's chilling, beer while it's chilling, and meat. That's it.
Yeah.
And So my wife said, well, it doesn't make sense. You know, we've got all this space. And I was like, you have two refrigerators that you can use. Just use that. But it's that kind of stuff. Like, I've been...
I'm 2 days away from buying a lock on this goddamn freezer. Well,
it's got a lock on it. I think I'm going to start locking it. But with my mother-in-law, I do exaggerate a lot of them just because it makes it funnier. Fine.
It's almost like a comic strip to me because I can just visualize it.
It's wild. Like,
it's like the word bubble is what you're saying. Yeah. And then just a made up Eastern European language of, you know, symbols for whatever she's
saying. I don't know if I put this one on there. Like, I asked, she is always asking me what I want to eat. And sometimes I just want American food.
Yeah.
She asked me, and I said, I told my wife to tell her, I just want spaghetti. Spaghetti with like a meat sauce. Just brown hamburger, the can of meat sauce, spaghetti, Parmesan cheese. That's all I want. So she goes, okay, it's ready. And I go sit down, and I'm presented with a bowl of borscht with spaghetti in it. And I'm like, this is not what I asked for. It's good, but it's not what I wanted. I just want American food once in a while.
Yeah.
And
in my own house.
Yeah. In my house.
That I pay for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. And the latest stuff has been teaching her how to drive.
I'm teaching her how to drive.
And so my wife doesn't have the patience to teach her how to drive. So I'm doing it even though I don't speak her language. So we'll drive somewhere. Like I was like, the other day I was like, okay, let's go to the Whole Foods.
If there was a Modern Family reboot, this is it, because this is real.
Right.
And not just rich white people in California that can easily afford that lifestyle, which I have issues with that title of that show, Modern Family. I'm like, oh, your uncle's gay? Like, yeah, who gives a shit? That's commonplace. Like, who cares? You're also all well off.
Right.
So you're
very well off.
Go fuck yourself.
It's where they live is super expensive.
And your old, most well-off patriarch has a hot young Latina wife
or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, how did he ever get that? Anyways.
Yeah.
Now, this is more true. This is true.
This could easily,
but all of this just screams sitcom to me. A single camera, you know, nothing hokey, no three camera bullshit. A single camera.
Well, we're driving down the road, and to get to Whole Foods from here, you go up here, you make a right, and then you make a left. And then you make a right, and you're at Whole Foods. Very simple. So we go up. She stops at the stop sign about 40 feet back. And she's like, can I go? And I'm like, you can't see. You can't see left or right.
Yeah.
Pull up to the stop sign. She pulls up like 5 feet. Pull up further. You have to look. Do you see any cars? No. Pull up closer. Do you see? Can you see it? She's like, oh, okay, yes. I was like, okay, turn right. She goes left. It's the first turn is a left turn. So I say, okay, turn left. And she goes right. Like, okay, that's fine. We'll just go around the loop. Cause you know, it's a loop. So who cares? Yeah. You know, just go around the loop, come back. Let's practice the stop sign again. She gets the stop sign. Okay. And I go, okay, now make the left. And so she makes the left, go down the street. Then I'm like, okay, after this stop sign, you're going to make a right. So we go by. I said, make a right there. Make a right. Okay, well, we missed.
Pointing.
It. Okay. Yeah, pointing out.
Which is easy.
Right there? Yes, right. When I say right and I'm pointing, that's where I want you to go right. Go right. And she's like, well, I thought it was a parking lot. Or that. This is what I gathered from. She doesn't speak English well enough for me to fully understand what she's telling me. I think she thought it was a parking lot. I don't think she has the concept that if there's a street with no stop sign, that it is possibly a street, not a parking lot.
Yeah.
So okay, fine. We go up there. I was like, okay, now just pull into the Whataburger parking lot and we'll turn around. So she's going, turn right into the parking lot. Turn right. And then we're at the light. Okay, we missed that. So we're not going to be able to go there. And this road is busier than I want you to drive on.
Oh yeah, Collins right there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's.
So I was like, so get on the light, and when you come, and I go, when you come out here, immediately pull into the Whataburger parking lot because I don't want you driving on that road. So she goes up, and passes it, goes down, and then pulls into, I don't know what those other shopping center stuff is up there, but like where the car wash is and kind of stuff. She pulls in there. I was like, luckily it was connected, so she could go around the back and come back. I just wanted her to take the back roads. I didn't want her to go on Collins because it's busy. And, but the entire time just going, make a left, make a right. And she's, oh, that one? Yes, the one that I was pointing at telling you to turn. I mean, it's a nightmare. But she got there, parked well. The ride home was much better because I think she remembered how to get home.
Okay.
So that was better. But it's a lot of that kind of stuff where it's like I say something. I think it's been translated correctly, but it's clearly there's something lost in translation. Like with the food, like I want American spaghetti. Meat sauce, the sauce. And this is the thing too. I bought sauce, like Prego in the can.
Yeah.
I pointed at it. She didn't use it. So like, how is it that none of this makes sense to me.
You're in America. You can be lazy as fuck right now. Yeah. Here's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like my wife always complains that our salads have like too large of pieces in it. So like when I have a salad, I just want lettuce, croutons, some Caesar dressing, maybe a little cheese. That's what I want. These salads that my mother-in-law makes are so complicated and everything is chopped up so tiny that it's more like a casserole than a salad.
Like pico de gallo.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
On top of some leaves.
Yeah, but that's what my wife likes. So I'm like, why would you eat this? Like, you're not even like getting the flavor of the whole chunk. She's like, well, it's a combination of flavors. Okay. Well, I don't like that. But when it's whole pieces, like an American food, I can just pick out what I don't like.
Yeah.
So.
If I like cherry tomatoes, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. It's in here. I'm going to eat it. Just move past it. Especially if I bought it. I was like, you know what? I bought it. I'm not going to. The older I get and I'm just trying to like, you know, eat better.
Yeah.
But I'm also lazy.
Yeah.
So like. My foods are very simple, but try to be healthy. And that's where I try to use my own laziness.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I'm trying to eat better. So, okay, fine. I don't have to go get Taco Bell if I just eat something here.
Yeah.
As long as it's moderately healthy, then I can at least head my laziness off at the pass.
Right. Yeah.
And just make myself something to eat. And I'm just like, I just want to eat and get over with.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like the having just the meat in the freezer is because
you
can pull out a steak and just make a steak. And they're individually packaged, so you just make one.
Oh, okay.
And I pretty much only eat meat. I vegetables sometimes, but with my mother-in-law cooking, like there's always some sort of elaborate meal that's made for 30 people, even though there's only three of us living here. But
5 days of preparation.
Yeah.
Is something happening? Is there a festival? Yeah, a right. Ukrainian, you know. Ancient, you know, festival that I didn't know was happening.
Well, yesterday was their Easter.
Oh, okay.
So because their Easter is a week after our Easter, and it's called Pascha, and they make these cakes for it. And like,
I want to say that was on our calendar. The one at home, was there something like? Oh, I'm sorry. Continue. I was like,
well, there are these like
Orthodox like, Easter. Yeah, okay, yeah, at least that's.
There are these like tall cakes that are good. I like them. But like we came home from somewhere, my wife and I were out, and she had made like, I'm definitely exaggerating, but she had made like 20. So there was probably 10. But I was like, why would you make this many cakes for three people? And we still have a whole bunch of them in there. Like, but they're good cakes.
Don't
but,
shove these things off on your on me.
I'm like, what is going? Like, why would you make this? She turns out she was making it for some of the neighbors. So some of the neighbors that kind of we have kind of like left wing neighbors.
Okay.
And because of the whole Ukraine situation, she's kind of been adopted into
as
like an ornament to show off to their friends that they're righous. So. Which is great because
even though it's like you're the one like I took her. I mean, it's my wife's mom.
It's my mom. It's my mother-in-law. So like it's like, okay, well, we're going to take. But what's funny about it is like so these people on the corner that are her friends had this gigantic anti-Abbott sign.
Okay.
a while ago. And I'm not a huge fan of Abbott, but like I don't care one way or the other. But it was when like it wasn't this past ice storm. It was the ice storm before that. When a lot of people lost power.
Yeah.
And they're old people, and I guess they lost power. We didn't lose power, so I don't know how they did. But they had this gigantic sheet where they had painted, shame on you, Abbott. old people need power or something like that. Or they probably said it more polite than old people, but or the elderly or seniors or something like that. But and I remember just seeing it being like, he's the governor. He's not like he can't really control the power.
Yeah.
And it's you guys voting for things like wind that are causing the power outages. Like it is, but that's who she made friends with.
Hey, it's probably more complicated than just yelling at Abbott.
Right.
And that's where I'm smart enough to know that and to say that.
Yeah.
But then I'm also smart enough not to, I know that I don't know exactly. I'm like ERCOT. I know it's down that direction.
Yeah.
But that's who you probably want. And maybe previous people who are head of, you know, whatever Texas Department of Energy equivalent is.
Yeah, the whole thing is a mess and very complicated. But a lot of it has to do with federal government subsidies to green energy. So, like, ERCOT is not allowed to differentiate between the source of power. They just have to take the cheapest bid. But because of federal subsidies, wind can usually bid in at -1 cent. So they can pay ERCOT to take it.
Oh. Okay.
And so that generates a whole bunch of people wanting to build windmills, but the problem is that they wanted to save money, so they didn't winterize them because it's Texas. Like we don't have ice and stuff like that. And then the backup for wind is natural gas. So most of those wind turbines will have either a centrally located gas power plant or a generator on the bottom of the windmill that has a gas pipe going to it. But because it was so cold and they don't winterize the pipes, also, the gas was out. so that's kind of why. But it's more complicated than that. There's a whole bunch of stuff like that when in the 70s, when there was that big power outage in New York, they funneled a whole bunch of electricity from Texas up to New York. But the problem was a transformer somewhere that was the problem. So they basically put a whole bunch of people in Texas without power to try to get energy up to New York, but they couldn't receive the power, so Texas decided that was unfair.
Oh.
We're going to go ahead and cut off the grid.
Oh, wow.
And so there's only a couple of connections outside of Texas. There's a ton of connections to Mexico.
Thanks a lot, East Coast liberals.
Right, yeah. Well, we have a ton of connections to Mexico. We sell them power.
Oh, okay.
So like we have good relations with Mexico, but very bad relations with New York. But that's sort of...
I'm not seeing a downside.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of like complexity in that sort of stuff. That's kind of what we were talking about too, with like the wars and stuff like that. It's not like on its face type thing, but like I don't want
to. As a young pothead, it's easy to be like, legalize it, man.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, war sucks too. But then get into things like ERCOT or
it's wild.
A buddy of mine, we had this like Facebook group. I forget the name of it. Oh, it was called. it was called Appetite for Discussion.
Okay,
as a GNR reference there. And one of the things that me and him personally just did, but my buddy, he's a super hard, like damn near a communist, but it kind of just plays into it. He's also just like this burly kind of metal dude and whatnot. But he's a great dude. And one of our main, like the focal point of our political discussion was the post office.
Oh, okay.
And his adamant defense of it and me saying it's like, well, there's the reason that they, and what's funny is even now, I always feel like every year I'm always winning that argument without us actually having to have a discussion, because it's like now you have these postal people that are just like, well, hell, you got a Democrat in the White House. But all these postal people are just like, you're cutting my pay and upping my hours and fucking me.
Yeah.
But one of our original like talking, discussion points was it's like the post office. It's like, well, how are people that live out in bumfuck nowhere going to get their mail? And I'm like, you think the last thing someone that lives in rural bumfuck nowhere wants is a government employee to know where they live, let alone come on their property or anywhere near it? I don't think these people care about post office and DFW. Okay, you probably got a great argument there. Like, yeah, let's just get our mail. But also look at your mail and how much of that is bullshit and how you're just kind of like, I would, and I think it's just get more irrelevant to this day. And this discussion started like almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Back when, you could do a lot of things on the internet back then. You can do even more now.
Yeah.
Oh, paperless. Everything, which is kind of like cool. So post office is getting very irrelevant, and thanks to Amazon, FedEx, UPS,
Yeah. You know. Well, I mean, even back.
I won that argument. I'm sorry. I won that argument.
Yeah, because the post service is constitutional. But what's funny about it is there's nothing in the Constitution saying that you can't have competition. But for a long time, you couldn't.
Mm.
So Lysander Spooner, who I've got a book of his over there somewhere, he wrote Vices Are Not Crimes and The Constitution of No Authority and a couple of other books like that. But he was an entrepreneur, and he started the American Letter Mail Carrying Company, I think it was called. So undercut the U.S. Postal Service by like 50%, faster delivery to rural areas, all of that sort of stuff. And because it was such a good mail delivery company, it was putting the post office out of business. So they sued him to shut down the letter mail carrying company. And this was like 1850 or something like that. Like,
oh,
this is a long time ago. Yeah, but he knew. He was like, there's a better way to do this. You guys are really slow, and you have all this, you know, bureaucracy and crap. I can do it cheaper and faster. But the government sued him and said, nope, you're not allowed to do it. I don't remember when that was overturned, but like UPS and all that sort of stuff, like they're not allowed to put it in your mailbox. But now I would rather ship stuff through UPS or FedEx, even if it's a little bit more expensive, because it's not going to get damaged. And I can track it.
And you can get an email when it's like, your shit's here. And you're like, cool thing. Maybe even a text. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And I guess, and the USPS does that too, I guess now, but it's like.
Now
they do. Yeah. Like, you guys didn't pioneer this sort of stuff. So you just are basically playing catch up.
Yeah. You just have buildings people loathe the idea of standing in line in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of like a veteran's job program, I think. It's like you get out of the military and you go work for the post office. And
it gives people things to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So. It's like my dad, who's like partially retired with my grandfather's old beauty supply distribution business.
Yeah.
My dad started taking it as Social Security, but he's just kind of winding down. And he just turned 70, but he's still just driving around, you know, placing his orders off legal pad. Just like, all right, and people who are probably as old as he is, he's just kind of like, all right, well, when we all getting closer to check it out, he'll probably just, you know, like, all right, you know, sell the rest of the supply.
This just occurred to me was a complexity. So everything we've been saying, things are more complicated than it seems. And during COVID, the one thing that was like that was really good for Childeberg, because I didn't cancel it for COVID because I didn't believe in it. Or I mean, I believe it exists, but I didn't
believe in shutting down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But
outdoor hang.
Childeberg Dose was supposed to be in Emma Long Metropolitan Park in downtown Austin.
Okay. Oh, that definitely wasn't going to happen.
I was calling them every single day. Have you shut down the park? Have you shut down the park? No, no. No, 7 days before Childeberg Dose, they call me and go, the park's been ordered to shut down. We'll give you a refund, there's several things that angered me about it. We'll give you a refund in 6 to 7 weeks.
Oh, Jesus.
And so I'm like, okay, so what am I supposed to do? And they're like, well, you know, it's shut down. So figure something else out. And I was like, I'm not canceling the event. I had a backup location.
Okay.
So I called the backup location and said, hey, my original venue has fallen through. Can we do it there? And like, no, this is a Travis County. Is that
Austin. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Travis County Park. We can't be open. I was like, what? And I was like, but you're out on the river. You're far away from Austin. They're like, yeah, well, you know, county orders. So I was like, all right, called up my third location, or I found a third location, called them up. And it was a private location, so I was like, they're for sure not shut down. Called them up. They're like, well, when Travis County shuts down, we shut down.
Wow.
Okay. But the fourth location, which is where you've been, both years. Mule Shoe Bend. That is owned by a federal organization that is left over from, like, the Depression era, the Lower Colorado River Authority.
Okay.
And I called them, and I was like, are you guys open? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, you don't have any restrictions or anything? They're like, no. Why? And they're like, well, we're kind of an independent agency of the federal government. There's no oversight for us. And so we just
They forgot we existed 47 years
basically,
ago.
Basically, yeah. And that's basically it. They own.
I'm one guy in a trailer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That just probably has a good salary still for some reason. Yeah.
Well, a lot of, like, I was talking to the lady who runs Mule Shoe last year, and it's just, it's their retirement plan. Is they've got their trailer there.
Oh.
They get free trailer. They get a little bit of money, and all they have to do is basically make sure that people get checked in and collect money.
So but, how many years? Oh, this coming up. This is all a giant commercial.
Yeah.
Coming up May
27th is when you're going to do your show. So it's the 26th through the 29th.
Is Childerberg.
It's Childerberg Go. Go is Japanese for five.
Oh, okay. But so, five.
Yeah.
You got to bring Pokemon into this.
I don't have the picture up, but the logo for this year is very Japanese.
Oh, okay.
So
this is the fifth year of Childerberg. This will be the third year I've done comedy.
Yeah, third year of comedy, third year of music.
Did you always had comedy or
no?
First year of that?
That comedy show that I went to and saw you at was like my third comedy show I'd ever been to.
Oh, okay.
And my wife and I discovered that we just like stand-up.
Not bad for Shane Gillis at a club, because last time he was here, he was at the Majestic Theater, which is still a fine place to see comedy. I think it's best at a comedy club. Majestic Theater, unfortunately for you in Dallas, but theaters of that size, comedy's still fine.
Right.
But it's just kind of like the intimacy is just destroyed because, it's like the darkness of a comedy club and the low ceilings. It just feels better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of one of the things I want to try to do for this year's Childerberg, is try to pack people in a little bit more and make it kind of more intimate,
because
that works really well. But we actually, when we lived in downtown Dallas, we went it wasn't because I was a particular fan of comedy or anything, but we went to Rogan because he was there and I liked his podcast.
Okay.
And
at the Majestic?
Dallas Stars Arena.
American Center. Airlines?
I don't know what it's called. But
the AAC. Yeah. There you go.
And when I was looking at like how big it was, I was like, well, I'm just going to shell out the extra money and get front row seats because I want to see this.
Okay,
But I'd never
I want to see the comedian telling the jokes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I'd never really been to a comedy show or really – I didn't ever watch stand-up.
Was that, so that was your first one?
Yeah.
Was comedy excellent. At the biggest possible venue size?
Yeah. I think maybe I'd seen like an improv troupe or something once or twice, but like it was like a high school or something like that. But it was so good, and Tony Hinchcliffe opened for him, and my wife and I both loved it. So I was like, there's comedy clubs around here. We should just go to the comedy clubs. Mm. And I think the second one we went to was Shane Gillis, where we met you. Mm. And around that time, I was starting to go like, I really like this. I'm not a particularly funny person, but I really like watching these guys and I could see too that it was kind of like it was a craft. Like there was like a formula to it, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of cool. It's like watching, MMA or something like that, but it's instead of trying to like manipulate the other person's body to submission, you're trying to manipulate the crowd to get a certain reaction."
Yeah.
And that's really I really liked that. I thought it was really cool, and you did a great job at with Shane Gillis, and then Shane Gillis just crushed it, and like I was like, yeah, this is what we want to do. And so
like the special he put out later on that he filmed, I think, not too long after that.
Yeah, it was really good. So now we go to a lot of them around here. There's a comedy. Actually, I don't really like this venue. Well, at least I didn't like where we sat down in Arlington over
the Highlands.
Yeah.
The Arlington Improv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they sat us, we had to like turn our heads, and I didn't like it. If I had paid for better seats, I probably would have enjoyed it more. But, so we really liked it, and so I was like, okay, well, I want to do this now. Like, I don't want to be the person doing the stand up, but I want to put the show on.
Yeah.
Like, I want people to come and do it, and that's when we met you. I knew Robbie because I listened to Dave Smith's podcast, and then got Robbie to bring Kyle, who's not going to be there this year, but we've got some other comedians coming.
You're like,
from Austin.
I think we can afford Robbie.
Yeah, basically. Like, so I sent him a T-shirt and a note and was like, "Hey, would you be interested in coming and doing Childerberg?" And this was this is kind of like libertarian back-end politics type stuff. But so there's this group called the Mises Caucus that has taken over the Libertarian Party at this point. But at Childerberg Dose, so it must have been earlier, because Childerberg Dose, I had gotten Robbie signed up to come out and do comedy that year. So that was the first year of COVID, or the first early part of it or whatever.
Okay. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I guess I had seen Rogan. I decided to get Robbie to come out, and then Shane Gillis, that was, I think, when we were coming out of lockdowns, was when we came and saw you. So I had him coming, but there was this all this infighting going on in the Libertarian Party, and the Libertarian Party was going to have
they were gonna have
their convention in Austin that year. And so I was like, oh, this is perfect. That's why I did it in downtown Austin, because I was like, we'll get a mini bus and just ship people between the convention and Childeberg.
Okay.
And we'll just have more people. And it's a cheaper place for people to camp. They won't have to get a hotel room. Because, you know, it's $10 a night or something like that to camp. And so so that was my idea. Robbie was going to come down and do comedy. There was going to be a lot of other people that are kind of like celebrities in the libertarian movement that were going to be there, that were going to come out and hang out, that, you know, we've gotten to know pretty well online. And the Fagcast was such a big show, which is Car Campit who came up with the name. So, and now their show is called Timeline Earth. Shout out to them. But their show had gotten pretty big in the libertarian circles. And so there was the kind of people in our section of like the Bitcoin, 3D printing guns, homesteading, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The people that actually do shit.
Yeah, yeah. Which, like that portion of the libertarian movement. Yeah. The ones that are not really that concerned with the politics part.
Yeah.
And I used to be more into the politics stuff, but now I'm kind of more into those things, Bitcoin and
3D printing. Let's actually do something and hang out together.
And so that was going to be like the big thing. But then even before they were forced to, although they said they were forced to, later we found out that that was not true, they canceled the libertarian convention preemptively. There was a lot of, I don't know what's true and what's not true because I wasn't involved in it, but like there was a whole bunch of people who were saying that they were doing that basically to thwart the Mises caucus from kind of coming in and taking over. And then this next year or the year after, Mises caucus basically took over. So that's basically who's in charge of the party now. And they kicked out all the feds or the feds, quote unquote. But again, none of the people at Childeberg,
the Gary Johnsons of the Libertarian Party.
Yeah. They're kind of like the wishy-washy.
That guy seemed like a cool dude, but it was just like, the dude out of Auburn, the Mises caucus, they're like, no, we wrote all these goddamn papers. We're going to finally do something.
And I'm hoping that they do well. I mean, it's like I said, the people that come to Childeberg are not really that into the libertarian politics.
Yeah.
A lot of them are Ron Paul movement.
Yeah, and you can tell that by talking to them.
Yeah.
But also, it's a bunch of people that are like-minded, but not too heavy-handed in why they're like-minded.
Right, yeah, exactly,
I love that feel, and that's what I've, the last two times I've always loved that, and it's like, we're hanging out. There's got these multiple like hangout spots that I'll just kind of travel back between because it's also dark and I don't know who's where. I'm not afraid
you've
to.
Got, yeah, I mean, you've got.
And I'm like where's got, Jacob or Will? Those are the two guys I know.
Yeah,
Robbie might be here somewhere. We're sleeping in the same place.
Yeah.
But I'll just walk around and start talking to people, and hopefully they'll remember in my end. They'll be like, oh, hey, man, great set. And I was like, oh, cool. And I can, pick it up from there.
And it's neat how it's kind of like changed because at Childeberg 1, there was 25 people, maybe 30. And it was just basically a camping cookout. And then at Childeberg Dose, it grew a little bit. It was like 40 or something. And then at Childeberg 3, which is the first one that you did, we had almost 200 people. And then last year we had a little bit more than 200 people. And then this year, I don't think we're going to actually have as many people this year just because the economy, a lot of people have messaged me and said like, oh, I can't afford
some people
to come
probably
out.
Like fly in, right?
Yeah, a lot of people fly in. We had a guy come from Scotland at Childeberg 3.
Nice.
I think this year actually somebody's coming in from Norway and a couple of Canadians are coming down. They're having issues because the United States still requires vaccination to come into the country. So like they're going like, well, how do we get in? But it turns out they don't require vaccination to come into the country. They only require vaccination to fly into the country.
Oh.
So if you just drive across the border, it's not a problem. So
just wave you on through.
it doesn't make any sense. But so we got a lot of people. But it's kind of been cool to see how it like changed from like just a cookout, like a weekend cookout kind of thing, into like there's a lot of big, like at least to me, big name Bitcoiners that come. A lot of people are into 3D printing guns and really impressed. I've been into 3D printing since like 2007 when I had my first programming internship. We built a 3D printer.
Oh, nice.
And it was complete crap. It barely could do anything. And then now people are building like 90% of a fully automatic weapon with a 3D printer. Like, it's crazy how good it's gotten. So it's really interesting to see those guys, like what they're able to do, what they've been doing. The Bitcoin stuff, that's kind of cool too, because like I've always sort of been interested in Bitcoin, and then like it really kind of started taking off, and it became a big attraction for a lot of Bitcoiners to like just come out and camp. People who like to camp and want to hang out with other people who are interested in that kind of thing, and then want to see a comedy show, want to see some music, and just hang out. And that's basically it. It's just, we got the lake, you can go swimming.
Yeah.
We got music and comedy on the 27th, and cookout and
you can
hang out.
See stars, which is always blows my mind, because I'm not an outdoorsy guy at all.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But they're like, just I'm there, I've had some beers, maybe smoked a joint with somebody, I'm just like,
yeah,
wow, stars, man, this is, you don't get that.
Yeah, you don't get it at
like, this is worth the trip alone.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool, it's nice. And we've been real blessed with like good weather the last couple years.
Yeah.
Last year was really hot, but and it was dry, so we weren't able to have fires. But this year I think it's based on the forecast, we'll have plenty of rain and beforehand, and that'll make it so we can have fires, because it's easier to go from like section to section where like you've got the gun guys here and you got the Bitcoin guys here and you got this, you know, the druggies over here. It's like high school cliques kind of. But I'll chill.
Yeah.
So you got kind of all these groups, and you can just go from fire to fire and see what people are talking about, or what they're eating, what they're doing. So we have a lady.
And that beer over here, I remember. Yes,
there's tons of beer. Yeah. There's a lot to drink. There's usually drugs that are available, either, you know, joints or something like that. That a lot of people will wrap those and bring those, but keep it on the DL because it's not allowed in Texas. it's a good time. It's fun, just fun to hang out with people.
Yeah, I've had a blast every time, and I'm looking forward to May that way, because I can also dip into Austin, say hi to some friends. I finally had a buddy hit me up. He's from Arlington. He moved down to Austin. Had him on the podcast before. His name's Seth Brown. Hippy dippy. He's I got some friends that are I love a good gun toting liberal.
Yeah.
Lefty liberal that is totally. I got a buddy that's like super hard John Brown Gun Club type. But he's just like, I fucking hate liberals. And I was just like, I wish I could have some people like, you know, people that you love jerking themselves off about how liberal they are. I wish I could teleport them in front of my buddy Dave and just be like, Dave here, you probably agree with a lot Dave does. But Dave doesn't agree with a lot that you do.
Right.
Hey, Dave, show him your gun collection. And then I leave.
Yeah. I mean, like, so the thing is, like, most liberals are it's corporate. It's a corporate cultural thing.
I can stay. Seth let me stay on his couch in Austin because my two previous couch connections, or my buddy Dave is from Grand Prairie. He just had a kid. So I don't think that's an option, even though he had a guest bedroom one time.
Yeah.
And then my buddy, him and his girlfriend broke up, and he moved back to Arlington.
Oh, okay.
And so I can't stay at their place. So.
Yeah. Well,
but I can stay at my buddy's house. Yeah. So.
Well, you can stay. Actually, you have options. I think you can stay on the camping premise. There's a bunkhouse that has AC, private room.
Oh, okay.
So you can stay there, or you can stay at the Airbnb. So. So your option.
I'll get there early and check out. But
okay, sounds good. Yeah. So in the Airbnb, you'll share a room with somebody. It's bunk beds, but in the bunkhouse, it's just a bunkhouse with.
Which everyone has a shower I can rinse off in.
Yeah,
that's all I do. I'm not even talking. I don't need soap. Just give me a good rinse.
The new location has a shower house, so there could be a gay joke in that, but also. there's a shower house.
I'm not jerking anyone off, but if they want to watch me, we can negotiate. No, the safe distance, no touching.
This year, the campsite this year, so previously the campsite was extremely primitive. No running water, no electricity. This year we have some limited electricity, but probably.
Yeah, me regular, on stage.
So we have limited electricity, we have running water, and there's a shower house at the campsite, which is nice because if you got, you know, mostly dudes, 3 days, no shower, swimming around in muddy water, after 3 days it starts to feel kind of gross and also starts to smell kind of gross. So.
It is pretty dude heavy, but that's fine. It's like no one's going to Childerberg. Someone thinks like, I'm going to go get laid at Childerberg. Yeah. Hey, It could happen. Whatever. But
if you're into guys, yes.
It's definitely... We got people from all walks of life.
Right.
Here.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, it's definitely... definitely dude central, which is fine. I mean, okay, when you're going to go camping, it might be a couple, but chances are it's a bro down.
A lot of it's like my wife doesn't want to camp.
Yeah.
So she gets an Airbnb and we'll come down for the day and then go back to the Airbnb at night and take a shower and sleep in a bed and have AC. And, but for all like the ladies that come, some of them are like legit campers and will camp. Like shout out to Rebecca. She had like a really cool tent and had that all set up and last year. But for the most part, I think what really kind of stops the ladies typically is that there's no bathrooms. There's only porta potties.
Yeah.
And this year though, there are actually stationary bathrooms and a shower house. Mm. So if you're a lady and you're interested in coming to Childeberg, Those amenities are available for you. I bet you there's a mirror in the bathroom too. And I know women like that.
I want all these burly dudes to think I'm pretty. No, they won't care. They won't care. It's also it's going to be dark a lot.
Yeah, so. That's true. Yeah, a lot of people they sleep in for most of the day because are hungover from the day before. And but I think it's going to be a good year. I think the show's going to be really good too. We got some good musical acts. Nikki P, who played last year, Owen Glass is going to play. We got a new musical act. It's Phil. He's known as Mr. Sue online, and he does he's like bar covers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then we've got you and Robbie, and then two other comedians whose names I don't recall from Austin that are going to come out, and they're going to do comedy too. So I think it's going to be a good year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to it, man. All right. Well, thanks for inviting me into your house.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You have to, because I'm a vampire. All right, this has been another episode of the Breckening Podcast. If you want to hang out and have a good time, and maybe or maybe not talk anarchist politics. Speaking of, your podcast, Tasting Anarchy.
Tasting Anarchy, yeah.
Check that out. Chances are, if you're checking out this podcast, you've already heard.
Yeah.
You already listened to who do you do that with?
My friend Mason.
Mason, okay. Yeah. But yeah, thanks for listening to this, guys. Breckening Podcast. Like, download, subscribe, listen. Come see me do stand-up. Just check my socials at The Breckening. Y'all have a good day.